Campaign for Press and Broadcasting Freedom presents Radio Free Press, campaigning for free, independent and accountable media.
I'm Nicholas Jones, and the aim of this podcast is to explore the troubled future of the BBC. How could a great British institution, respected around the world for its independence, get so comprehensively ambushed by the government of the day? Why did the management roll over and get railroaded into accepting a crippling 6-year freeze on the annual licence fee? And why did it accept a raft of new commitments without any financial compensation? My 3 decades as a BBC correspondent were the golden years, a roller coaster ride of continuous expansion with the introduction of a host of new services on radio, television, and now online. But the BBC employees of today, well, they perhaps face years of savage retrenchment. Cuts will also be the order of the day for the BBC's renowned World Service. Here to discuss the implications of an unprecedented step change in the status and funding of the BBC are the Labour frontbencher and Shadow Culture Secretary Ivan Lewis, Laura Davison, acting broadcasting organiser for the National Union of Journalists, and Tony Lennon, lay official of the main broadcasting union BECTU for 25 years. First, let us assess the momentous events in October 2010, when the BBC suddenly found itself caught up in the budget deficit reduction cuts that were being imposed by the new coalition government of Conservatives and Liberal Democrats. Ivan Lewis, as a Labour frontbencher, did the Labour shadow cabinet have any idea that the BBC's future income was going to be reduced so drastically?
No, we didn't. I mean, this all happened over a 72-hour period. There were leaks to newspapers. Initially, the Chancellor of the Exchequer and the Secretary of State for Culture tried to get the BBC to take over responsibility for funding free TV licences for over 75s. The BBC Trust quite rightly resisted that. But then there was a deal done, in my view, in undue haste.
Should then it have been possible, in your view, for the BBC to have continued have survived on the licence fee that the previous Labour government had already fixed?
Well, that was an option, but I think in an age of austerity, it would be wrong to pretend that the BBC can somehow be immune from cuts. The problem is the way this whole process was approached. There was complete disregard for the independence of the BBC, for the fact that the BBC is one of our greatest institutions. If you ask the public, they talk about the NHS and BBC as two of the great institutions they're most proud of. So it was a dubious deal. And frankly, it means also that in terms of change that has to come to the BBC, there won't be anywhere near as much scrutiny as there would have been if there would have been a serious debate over a reasonable period of time about the licence fee settlement.
So it was that missing debate that should have been held in public and wasn't held in public.
Very much so, and that's what gives me serious cause for concern. Yes.
So Tony Lennon, as a former president of the broadcasting union BECTU, did the broadcasting trade union see this coming?
Absolutely not, and in the same way as the Labour opposition, and I suspect most industry figures were caught out, this was a situation where the BBC was caught up in the last knockings of horse trading at Treasury level to try and put together the comprehensive spending review, and as we understand it, the BBC was given about 2 days to accept the cuts, the freezing of the licence fee, or take its chances with the public. And essentially, they went along with the freeze, which compared to a lot of public sector entities is not a disaster because it is at least a freeze and not a cut in real terms. On the other hand, you have to ask, does a freeze in the BBC licence fee do anything to contribute to the reduction of national debt that the government is after, or to the reduction of overall public expenditure? And in fact, it doesn't affect either of those metrics.
Laura Davison, on behalf of the NUJ, you're the acting broadcasting organiser. Did the journalists, did your union see this coming? Did you really have any inkling that it could be so severe?
No, we didn't see this coming at all. And you know, I just would re-echo what has been said about the fact that this was a deal done behind closed doors in a very short space of time. There was no opportunity for staff to be involved, and even the BBC's own management to be involved with this debate. There was no opportunity for listeners or viewers to be involved, and there wasn't any parliamentary scrutiny, and hasn't been any parliamentary scrutiny of the decision to date. And you know, all those things mean that there was a total lack of transparency.
Are the unions, do you think, coming to terms with what does seem to be a very reduced horizon for journalistic output?
Well, obviously the implications of the settlement are incredibly worrying. It's very difficult to see how the BBC can continue in the form that it is at the moment with such severe cuts to its budget. And it's not just obviously the freeze in the licence fee, it's the additional spending that the BBC has been asked to take on. It's the taking on of the BBC World Service, it's taking on of BBC Monitoring, it's funding S4C, and it's funding the costs of various government projects, pet projects like local television, and the rollout of broadband. So it's not just about the freeze in the licence fee.
Right. Before we go on to consider what the opposition and the trade unions would like to say about the future, let's just pause for a moment and try to work out how it was that the BBC ended up in this beleaguered position. Now, my own feeling was that this was perhaps a train crash waiting to happen, that somehow the BBC, to me, had lost its way. There'd been this headlong rush to get a corporate identity for the BBC, this emphasis on its commercial arm, and somehow they'd lost the ideals that attracted me when I joined the BBC in the 70s, when there was an open debate about the licence fee. So how was it, do you think, Ivan Lewis, can we actually point an accusing finger at the last Labour government and ask you how it was that a Labour government allowed the BBC to get into a position where it could be ambushed so easily?
Well,
one
of the things we pride ourselves in this country is the separation between government politicians and the BBC. So we didn't take operational responsibility for the decisions that the BBC made over those years. You're right to say about values that are eternal, but you can't carry on running a modern broadcasting organisation in the same way as you ran it even 10 years ago, let alone 30 years ago. So you have to modernise, you have to recognise we're in a digital age, you have to recognise if the BBC is going to be available to a broader range of people using a variety of mediums, it has to change and it has to modernise. But I think what gave the game away on this one was when the Prime Minister described the cuts to the BBC as delicious. And what that said to me was there was a political agenda from day one, and the political agenda was to take on the BBC in some way. And that basically is what happened. Alongside that, does the BBC bear some responsibility for losing some credibility? So, for example, excessive pay at the top, an issue that you can't ignore.
Why didn't the Labour government intervene there, though? A Labour government could see the BBC management rewriting, in my opinion, their own terms, in the sense that they were saying, look, we want to compare ourselves to the private sector, not to the public sector, and it opened up the BBC to a degree of vulnerability which the Conservatives and the coalition government was able to exploit.
Well, I think that's true. I think that we would say that in our discussions with the BBC, we wanted to see reform and change, and we tried to make that happen. But we also have to recognise that there is an operational separation, that once you have the charter, you have the licence fee settlement, the decisions that are made are the responsibility in terms of the new governance arrangements of the trust and of the Director General. And you wouldn't welcome a government that interfered in those operational decisions.
Laura Davison, do you think the journalists, and you have represented the journalists there, do you think that they have shared some of my concern that somehow the BBC did lose its way and somehow was in a vulnerable position, as Ivan Lewis has just said, that there was a political agenda here, some degree of settling scores, which certainly the coalition has settled?
You know, I think the trade unions have always been a critical friend of the BBC, if you like, because clearly we are very strong supporters of public service broadcasting and the role that the BBC plays in that. But I think it would be true to say, as Ivan has said, that there have been concerns around excessive pay at the top of the BBC. And that those concerns have got into the public domain. People have asked questions, quite rightly, about that, and that that has not helped the BBC's case in terms of making the argument for the licence fee. I don't think that the BBC Trust has made a particularly robust argument for the licence fee since it's come into existence. I don't think that it has come out and been a cheerleader for the licence fee in the way that it perhaps should have done. So I think all those things have put the BBC in a weaker position.
Tony Lennon, with your long experience with the broadcasting unions, do you think that it was the greed, one might almost say, certainly extravagance of some of the management when it came to their own salaries? Do you think that that opened up a vulnerability that has now been exploited by the coalition?
It's been exploited by anti-BBC forces from the Daily Mail through to Rupert Murdoch's News International. Let's put it in perspective, yes. Executive pay at the BBC got completely out of hand. The differential between top bosses and ordinary workers became almost obscenely great. But actually, the bosses' salaries are a small proportion of what the BBC spends. Let's talk about funding. You asked where is the open debate about BBC licence funding. In fact, there probably has never been one, because this is an issue that is carefully kept away from the Houses of Parliament. It is not debated on the floor of the Commons. It is a ministerial, departmental decision whenever the licence fee is reviewed. So I would say, yes, the BBC didn't do its reputation much good on executive pay, but there were far larger forces outside the BBC reined against it.
Ivan Lewis, you wanted to come in.
Yeah, it's not just about excessive pay at the top. That's one issue. It's also about when the new government came in, I'm no friend of the new government, they demanded that the accounts of the BBC be independently audited. And it appeared for quite a significant period of time the BBC was reluctant to allow that independent auditing to take place, which wasn't a very clever move. The other issue, I think, is that the broadcasting environment globally is massively changing through digitisation, through rapid global change. And the BBC, to be fair, has to be able, in a position to respond to those changes. It has to be a dynamic organisation whilst preserving its values and its principles. So it's not just simply about preserving the status quo and being conservative about the role of the BBC at the beginning of the 21st century. We want our public service broadcaster to be at the cutting edge of broadcasting in this country, but also around the world.
And do you think that the Labour Party in opposition is now working out policies, Tony Lennon, which can address that?
Well, the Labour Party in government has in recent history been very helpful to the BBC, because in 1999 an inherited licence funding formula was unpicked by Chris Smith, then Culture Secretary, and he paved the way for the BBC to grow its services in digital media and online generally. I mean, what I'd ask Ivan is, we agree certainly that the BBC can't stand frozen in aspic, but how do you help an organisation like that move on if you have frozen its income in real terms?
Well, I'll give you a straight answer to that. I mean, first of all, there was no transparency about the impact of 16% cuts over 4 years. It was done in such a hurry. We know that £500 million has to be taken out of the BBC. There's no clarity, as I can see at the moment, as to specifically how that is going to be done, other than we're told it's going to affect initial programmes, the creativity, etc. So there needs to be a much greater light shone on the impact of these cuts. But I would also
say, because
you've
called for an inquiry, haven't you, into how the 6-year licence fee is going to operate and how the deal
will work? Well, I've called for a lot more parliamentary scrutiny. We didn't even have a debate on the floor of the House. But I think it's also important to say this. If in an era where every public sector organisation is facing serious cutbacks, and we think that this government is going too far and too fast, it doesn't have a strategy for growth, and by the way, the BBC contributes a lot towards the creative industries and the potential for growth. But in that context, the idea that the BBC also shouldn't contribute and have to recognise it has to do things differently and it has to make savings, I think would damage the credibility of the BBC beyond all recognition. So it clearly had to make some level of contribution to these difficult times. But the way it was done, the lack of scrutiny, the lack of an impact assessment on the BBC is a source of massive concern.
Laura Davison, do you think, looking ahead now, you've heard Ivan Lewis say that he is demanding much greater scrutiny of the future arrangements of this six-year deal. You've heard Tony Lennon's concern. Do you think that the journalists will be able, through their union, to exercise some influence over this?
Yeah, I mean, I think there does need to be scrutiny because there are big questions unanswered about what this funding settlement is going to mean. Clearly, we want to see core services that the BBC produces protected. There are big questions around the future of the World Service and BBC monitoring. It's likely that there will be wholesale closures within the World Service as a result of these proposals. And I think that's something that the whole country should take an interest in and really consider whether that's something we want to be doing in terms of the impact that it will have on Britain in the world.
I want to come back and ask Ivan Lewis in a moment about the Labour government's creation of this BBC Trust. If we explain the BBC Trust, many of the journalists think that it's been an abysmal failure. Does the National Union of Journalists think that the Trust is going to be the right vehicle to help with the management and oversee the future of the BBC?
I think obviously there are problems with the existing setup, as there were problems under the previous setup. It's coming into a period of time where there's going to be a change of leadership within the BBC Trust, and I think it's right that at that moment there is a kind of consideration of the role of the Trust and whether that separation is working and how it goes forward.
Ivan Lewis, do you accept the view of many that the Trust has been a failure, that it's failed to protect the interests? Certainly if we look at the dispute which now seems to be settled about BBC pensions, again the journalists were very unhappy with the structures that were in place.
Well look, the Trust has to act in the interests of the licence fee payer and also oversee the development of the BBC operational decisions that are made. Now, that dual role is challenging. On the other hand, I haven't heard anybody, frankly, come forward with an alternative plan which would not present the same challenges for any governance arrangements that were created at the BBC. So you can tinker all you like with organisational structures, but that, in the end, will not be the solution to facing up to some of the challenges that the BBC is going to have to face up to going forward.
Now, as an opposition, have you begun to think through your approach to the future? Would, for example, a future Labour government try to unpick any of these hastily arranged deals? For example, the fact that the domestic services of the BBC are now responsible for the world services. We've heard from Laura the concern for possible cuts in the world service, especially in the language services. What's Labour's thinking on this?
Well, look, I've been in this job for 2 months. We have a new leader. We have to face up to the fact that we lost the election, and we lost it quite badly. And we need to embark on a process of developing a policy by engaging with people who care passionately about the BBC, about broadcasting more generally, and we're going to do that. For me to say what we will do in 5 years' time or 4 years' time, it would be completely lacking in all credibility. What we want to do is, first of all, be a strong voice to defend and protect the BBC, but we also want to be a voice that will challenge the BBC and the need for change. And we need to get that balance right.
But on a fundamental, like defending and promoting the concept of the licence fee, where is Labour on that? Because one senses that with the Royal Charter of the BBC having to be renegotiated for 2017, hey, we could be in for some even bigger changes.
When I was a health minister, we used to have this debate that came from the right that the NHS was not sustainable. A tax-funded, free at the point of use healthcare system was not viable. And they were wrong, and they will always be wrong. And those people who argue that because of the changes in terms of the digital age, because of the changes in terms of the market, that this means the licence fee model is not fit for purpose and will not survive, I simply do not accept that. As long as it continues to have, as it does have, overwhelming public support in this country, then I believe no government will dare unpick that settlement between the British people and the BBC. Now, of course, it's partially also about the credibility of the BBC. If the BBC starts to lose that relationship with the British public and that credibility, increasing questions will be asked about the licence fee. But my view is that this is an argument that comes from the right. It isn't an argument that's about the mainstream majority of people in this country who, in the end, for all their complaints, are incredibly proud of our unique BBC as an institution and actually are pretty content about the licence fee.
And actually, just, I mean, if asked, people who pay the licence fee in research that's been done, evidence that's been collected, actually say, actually, they would pay more for the licence fee. And in this settlement, they were not asked that question. If faced with a choice between serious cuts to the services that the BBC produces, would you be willing to pay more? Well, we don't know the answer to that question. And I think that that debate should have been had to allow that to that discussion to have taken place.
Tony Lennon, do you have confidence in what Labour are saying, that at least we've had a clear statement of support for the value of a licence fee and the continuation of that licence fee?
Ivan is absolutely right in saying that if the BBC licence fee weren't there, nobody would bother to pay for the public goods and services that the BBC provides in the round. No doubt there would be commercial operators prepared to pick up little profitable bits, but the broad expanse of BBC services would not be funded by the advertising revenue funded public and private sector. So absolutely right on that. I just wanted to come in on governance. I mean, Ivan carefully is avoiding any commitment to where a prospective Labour government might be when the coalition falls apart. But I think the change is surreptitiously happening already. Most people inside the BBC and many observers have watched this horrible dichotomy between the BBC Trust that was meant to be an arm's length, we look after the public interest and we're high and mighty and we'll just set broad policies, and the day-to-day management of the operation by now the BBC Executive Committee. It has seemed at times they are either as one or they are at war. And I suspect that the growing number of placements of non-executive directors on the BBC executive will set a path towards the BBC ending up with a very corporate style company board, at which point you have to ask, what are the great and good doing here? Which in turn poses the problem of, okay, if they don't regulate the BBC in editorial and service terms, do you give it to Ofcom or do you do something different? Well, look, but the change is underway already.
Well, look, in our final 5 minutes, you've painted what could be a pretty bleak scenario, couldn't you? Because, of course, if there, there is that scale of change, it could threaten the independence, the renowned editorial independence of the BBC, couldn't it, if it becomes too much of a commercial-oriented organisation. So let's end with a final question to all three of you. Do you think it's going to be possible to preserve the independence of the BBC?
Yes, provided there is a political commitment to independent funding and a political commitment to the range of editorial, cultural, educational, entertainment output that the BBC does. If there's that political commitment and a willingness to stand back, then I think its independence will survive. If, however, we were to see a very obvious repeat of the 36, 48, 72-hour negotiate at the end of a gun barrel because we're telling you what your funding will be for 6 years, then I suspect the independence of the BBC is seriously undermined.
Your turn, Laura. How do you respond to this challenge that I certainly, as an ex-BBC journalist, feel that, look, I'm desperate to hear how is it going to be possible to preserve the quality and the impartiality of BBC's journalism? Do you feel, having seen what's happened in the last few months, that it is going to be able to guarantee that?
Well, just picking up on what Tony was saying there in terms of independence, I think that this settlement has posed lots of questions about the BBC's independence and has put that to a degree at risk, because it's turned the BBC into an organisation where it appears the government of the day can just come along and say, right, we'll have that, thank you very much, and here's some extra commitments that you have to take on, and that's it, done deal. And there's also a change in terms of the fact that the World Service will be becoming part of the licence fee. But the Foreign Secretary will retain the ability to take decisions around closures of World Service language services. So, you know, that there is already, those questions are already there.
But moving away from those structural questions, we come to the core question about the editorial independence, the respect that there is for the impartiality of the BBC's journalism. That's what's got to be protected as well, hasn't it?
Well, the BBC employs a number of incredibly talented journalists, and I'm sure that will continue to be the case. They have to have the freedom to do their job with the resources necessary to do so. And obviously our concern is that this settlement and any future cuts that may happen will impair that ability. And don't forget, the BBC has already been in a process of cuts for a number of years now. It's 4 or 5 years worth of cuts on cuts on cuts. So these are already, these are on top of cuts that are already taking place at the BBC. So it is very concerning.
Ivan Lewis, the final word to you. You've heard the concerns of the unions. There's this concern about the independence of the BBC, the future path of its journalism. Clearly, there's going to be a responsibility on the Shadow Cabinet, isn't it, to think through a policy with regard to the BBC?
Very much so. I think it's one of the great challenges that we face in terms of seeking to be back as a credible alternative government. Where do we stand on public service broadcasting? Where do we stand in this ever-changing world on the future of broadcasting generally? But I think there are two separate issues of independence and quality. On independence, I think we should actually acknowledge, to give some examples, that the World Service moving into the BBC from the Foreign Office ultimately, arguably, makes that more independent over time, frankly, than being controlled by
the
Foreign Office.
And that's the line of the BBC management.
And I think that's fair. The second thing is, very recently, the BBC chose to show the Panorama programme on FIFA in advance of the World Cup, despite lots of pressure to take a contrary course of action. So I think we've got to be careful to be too pessimistic about the BBC's capacity to retain its independence. I think that that is hard fought, and woe betide any government who tries to interfere in that. There is no doubt the way this government approached the negotiations on this occasion raises questions about their respect for the independence of the BBC, and we need to be ever vigilant about the behaviour of a Prime Minister who can say that cuts to the BBC are delicious. That's frankly not a good thing to hear from the leader of our country. In terms of quality, obviously, if you are going to face cuts of £500 million over the next few years, that raises massive questions about preserving quality. What should the BBC do in the future? Less of? What should it do more of? And whatever it decides to do in terms of responding to this changing environment, how can it preserve its reputation for excellence and quality? That is the challenge that faces all of us who care passionately about the future of the BBC.
Well, you've certainly given us something to think about. Thank you, Ivan Lewis. And on behalf of the Campaign for Press and Broadcasting Freedom, I'd like to thank Mr. Lewis, the Shadow Culture Secretary, Tony Lennon, former President of the Broadcasting Union, BECTU, Laura Davison, Acting Broadcasting Organiser for the National Union of Journalists. Thank you for taking part in this radio podcast.